Tuesday, July 16th. Today, while the Democratic National Convention swings into its second day in Chicago, the war in Europe reaches another stage. Britain has declared a blanket blockade against all Italian waters in the Mediterranean. And unofficial observers in London point out that the order leaves the way open for possible British naval action against Italian territory. Now for the news from Europe Direct, with the news from London, Berlin, and Rome. First, the report from the British capital by Edward R. Murrow. Go ahead, London.
This is London. Heavy bombers of the Royal Air Force, each carrying more than a ton of high explosives, have been ceaselessly raiding objectives in Germany every night since the surrender of France. According to the Air Ministry, this offensive action by large sections of Britain's bomber command is contributing effectively to a reduction in the striking power of the German Air Force. At 10:30 last night, 12 German and German-controlled radio stations closed down from Bremen to Vienna to avoid giving directions to the British raiders. Early this morning, Bremen radio station was silenced when it was scheduled with other stations to give a talk in English. Hamburg alone gave the broadcast. There were a few reports of activity by German planes over England during the night. One is believed to have been destroyed in the southeast area. Others flew over northeastern towns. Few casualties and little damage have so far been reported. Unconfirmed reports from Cephalonia, a large mountainous Greek island, tell of unexplained bombings of this neutral possession. Telephone communication between the island and Athens has ceased abruptly. The British search for the Italian fleet in the Mediterranean continues. Apparently, Mussolini's battle fleet has been sighted by the British Mediterranean force only once since Italy entered the war. At that time, the speedy Italian fleet piled on all steam to retreat to the cover of the powerful Italian shore batteries, says the British Admiralty. Naval experts here believe that the evasive tactics of the Italian fleet will be a fixed condition so long as the Battle of Britain remains in its present phase. For while Italy retains even a semblance of her battle fleet in being in the Mediterranean, Britain is forced to keep part of its sea forces east of Gibraltar to prevent the Italian warships from raiding Britain's Atlantic convoys. Meantime, the British Mediterranean fleet can fight off the constant threat of the large Italian air force only by means of the relatively few fighter planes that it can bring along in its aircraft carriers. The British Admiralty said this morning that greater submarine activity and the growing intensity of German dive bombing of merchant shipping took a greater toll of British shipping during the last week. 20 ships, British, Allied, and neutral, were sunk through German efforts. They represented a total of 114,137 tons, a considerably greater loss than that of the previous week. However, this figure is only a little more than one half of the total tonnage lost in the week of June 23rd, when over 200,000 tons went down. There's an interesting divergence between the propaganda coming from Rome and Berlin these days. The Rome radio and Signor Gaida hint that Britain may be given the opportunity to submit to the new European order without undergoing the promised horrors of invasion. Berlin, on the other hand, has nothing but threats of destruction and sudden death. London is not to be considered an open town, and citizens in the Rhineland are said to be demanding that the German Air Force be sent against Britain to retaliate for British bombing attacks in western Germany. The German radio for the last couple of days has been devoting much attention to the arrival in America of the children of distinguished British subjects. We're told today that this off-again, on-again children's evacuation scheme will be the subject of a statement by Mr. Attlee in the House of Commons this afternoon. The Daily Mail complains that the government is fumbling again in the evacuation of children overseas. It's high time the government reached a definite decision and stuck to it. Parents, school teachers, and the children themselves have become thoroughly bewildered. The London Times this morning prints in a prominent position a letter from Sir Evelyn Wrench proposing that the whole scheme be turned over to voluntary organizations in this country. Meanwhile, parents are still registering their children. China has lodged a strong protest with Britain against the British decision to suspend the arms traffic over the Burma Road. The British want peace between Japan and China. They believe that both countries are tired of the war, and there are persistent rumors of a secret peace move with the British ambassador acting as mediator. Many people here believe that even Hitler would like to see peace in the Far East, so that Russia would have to look to her Far Eastern frontiers. British reporters in Washington say that the United States is sympathetic to peace moves in the Far East, and that official American opinion is, quote, understanding and uncritical, unquote, about British efforts to satisfy Japanese demands and wean Tokyo from the Axis. I return you now to CBS in New York.
That was Edward R. Murrow reporting from London. Here is a press association dispatch from Tokyo. The Japanese Premier Admiral Yonai and his cabinet resigned today because of the steadily increasing pressure for a strong Japanese expansionist policy. The new cabinet, it is expected, will be pledged to an Army and Navy program calling for a Japanese Monroe Doctrine, not only covering East Asia, but the South Seas as well. Now, we've heard Edward R. Murrow reporting from London. In just a moment, we take you to the German capital for the report of Edwin Hartridge. Go ahead, Berlin.
This is Berlin. Editorially speaking, and just that, the blitzkrieg against England is going on full force. For the price of a newspaper, the German reader can have his fill of editorial threats and also the official German version of how bad the situation really is in England. But with the exception of the aerial and U-boat campaigns, that is about all the activity we can discover in that direction during these dull days before the storm is supposed to break. The papers continue their story that the British are on the verge of a panic, that they're wandering around without any idea of how to defend their country, and that the food supplies are reduced. Well, generally speaking, the German papers think that the average Englishman is having a pretty bad time of it, and the worst is yet to come. In line with this new totalitarian regime, France is now to have a sports dictator. I found this item in the Deutsche Allgemeine Zeitung this morning. And the new sports hero will be France's great tennis champion, Jean Verotra, the bounding Basque. Americans will remember him as a member of the great French team that won the Davis Cup for the United States years ago. Now Jean Verotra has been appointed to his new post by General Vagon, the French Minister of Defense. And the former tennis champion will have the full support of the army, General Vagon has assured him. The only other mention of France in the papers this morning is the reiteration of the German claims that have been featured the last week. It is a German complaint about the French mistreatment of German soldiers and civilians during the wartime. But the press campaign against the French still goes on. Approximately 20,000 Italian workers are shortly to arrive in Germany to be employed in industrial plants throughout the country. The first group of 716 will be sent to Rosenheim tomorrow. There's a great shortage of labor in Germany today due to the tremendous demands on the manpower of the country by the huge army machine. And so the southern partner of the Axis will help to cut down the shortage somewhat by exporting industrial workers. The rocky citadel of Gibraltar was bombed again on Sunday night, according to stories in the German press picked up from Madrid papers. In these stories, the identity of the attacking bombers is not made known. And in the reports of previous aerial attacks on Gibraltar, this same failure to identify the bombers was also noted. It has been one of the few instances where the belligerents who would most naturally be concerned have failed to advance any claims that their respective air forces were involved in the attacks on the British naval base at the western entrance of the Mediterranean. Then there was a report this morning that German planes bombed the Sea of Strasbourg last Friday night. 40 incendiary bombs were dropped from the low-flying planes. According to the official German statement, some of these land within 100 yards of a military hospital, the suburb of Neudorf. In a story this morning about the Democratic Convention in Chicago, the Deutsche Allgemeine Zeitung writes that the nomination of President Roosevelt for a third term may be expected on the first ballot. The Berlin paper states that there is overwhelming support for the renomination among the 1,094 delegates. And if the president does not choose to run again, then his influence will govern the choice of his successor. This is Edwin Hartridge. I return you now to Columbia in New York.
This is New York, and now we take you to the Italian capital for the latest news reported by Cecil Brown. Go ahead, Rome.
This is Rome. Italian airplanes, for the first time, bombed British bases in Palestine. The Italian High Command reports that fascist airplanes roared over Haifa in the Holy Land, dropping bombs on oil depots and hitting the refinery. Numerous fires were started. The Italian pilots reported on their homeward trip that they could see the fires from 100 miles away. The war communique reports that in East Africa, brilliant action enabled Italian troops to occupy four villages near the Kenya frontier. British planes attacked Tobruk, the Italian sea and air base in Libya on the Mediterranean. But the high command says it was unsuccessful. A British plane was shot down and the crew taken prisoner. British ground forces also attacked Italian positions near Lake Rudolph in southwestern Ethiopia. But the Italians say the attack was repulsed. There were reports abroad that Italian forces had bombed Greek ports, but this is denied in Italian circles. The Italians yesterday reported the sinking of a British destroyer. Today it's announced the victory was achieved when a fascist submarine engaged six British destroyers and torpedoed one of them. This communique indicates the advantage in the air that Italy has over England. Italian air bases are adjacent to most points in the British African and Near Eastern Empire. The Italian Empire is virtually an aircraft carrier, while England must use floating aircraft carriers. England's closest striking point against Italy, either by sea or air, is Malta. Well, Malta is raided every day and usually several times a day. And these constant air attacks are preventing the British attack from Malta in this country. And it's felt here that the island is becoming an untenable naval base. As a matter of fact, the Italian mainland has not been attacked by air for a week. The Rome newspaper Il Messaggero headlines this morning, "The Italian armed forces maintain their initiative in all sectors." Well, that's true of the Air Force and the Land Army in Libya and in southeastern Ethiopia. But thus far, the Italian Navy has not taken the initiative in any operation. According to figures published here, the British Air Force is outnumbered in this entire area by more than 3-1. That's a considerable numerical advantage. But what is most important from the Italian point of view, the British do not have much chance of replenishing their supply. To judge by the Italian communiques, the Italians are shooting down nearly four British planes to every one they lose. Churchill's speech about fighting to the end is seen by fascist circles as the beginning of the end for England. Many circles here, including neutral diplomats, believe that the prospects of England making peace now are brighter than ever before. That certainly is the attitude of the fascist press. The papers today picture a wave of defeatism in England. They say that Churchill's speech did not express the feelings of Englishmen. In the midst of the comments on Churchill's speech, the Axis press is hammering away on its theme of the dire consequences facing England when the attack does start. Neutral circles here feel that the best evidence that the Axis thinks England makes seek peace is the delay in the German attack. The papers quoted Churchill as saying that the war would be long, but no fascist paper reported his words that England would fight this year, next year, and in 1942. The Axis still banks on the war ending before this winter. The Popolo di Roma says the British case has been lost politically and morally. It says England's coalition mania induces her to appeal to a world that has become, for the most part, indifferent toward her. And this, the paper adds, is precisely the case of the United States. This morning's papers make no editorial comment on the biggest story in America, the Democratic Convention. Their stories feature the discovery of a dynamite plot near Chicago, and they expect that President Roosevelt will be renominated. The papers today print a story from Athens that the English have asked the Egyptians to disarm and turn their guns over to the British. Papers say this action is to force the hand of Egypt and, as they put it, to induce Egypt to adopt a policy contrary to her interests. This is Cecil Brown in Rome, returning you to Columbia in New York.
This is New York. Here is a late dispatch about the Democratic National Convention in Chicago. Draft Roosevelt forces now are claiming that they have enough delegate votes lined up to win by a landslide on the first ballot. They say that 904 of the total 1,094 votes already are pledged for the president. In Cairo, Egypt, a Royal Air Force communique says that British Royal Air Force planes have bombed Italian bases at Tobruk, Badia, and El Ghazala in North Africa, and El Fadia and Deir Dawa in East Africa. Direct hits were scored on two large naval oil tanks at Tobruk, the communique said, and many bombs burst in the target area there. And with these dispatches, we conclude this morning's report of national and international developments. Edward R. Murrow reported from London, Edwin Hartridge from Berlin, and Cecil Brown from Rome. Larry Elliott speaking. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.